Printmasters. Printmasters' goal is to provide its clients with the highest level of personal, professional service at an affordable price. Our state-of-the-art technology also makes working together efficient and easy. Laminations, business cards, flyers, posters, window and floor decals are just a few of the digitized print services offered at Printmasters. Call 302-2361, 302-2361, or visit us at the Nassau Guardian Building in Oaksfield. Print with the best. Print with Printmasters.
I'm Haya Panjwani with an AP News Minute. At a news briefing, Ambassador to the United Nations Linda Thomas-Greenfield says Washington will work together with allies to develop options inside and outside the UN to stop North Korea from illegal activities that violate sanctions.
The point here is that we cannot allow the work that the panel of experts were doing to lapse. We have to continue to keep eyes on and reporting on the illegal activities of the DPRK and efforts to break the sanctions that have been put in place.
AP correspondent Mary Claire Jolinek reports that Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer could call votes to dismiss two articles of impeachment against Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas.
The senators will be sworn in as jurors, and that's when the trial really begins. It's unclear exactly what steps Democrats are going to take.
I'm Haya Panjwani.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
And I'm right here laughing at Wally, right? Because he's playing my theme music. And I love my theme music. And normally I dance to it beforehand. And I'm saying, no, Wally, I want to go directly into this Grand Bahama Port Authority. To know, I enjoy your theme music too. So I'm smiling that. Today is Wednesday, April 17th, until after 11 o'clock in the morning. Again, this is Man Down Mashup Wednesday, where we combine both shows together and we interrogate the news. Today, we're talking about Grand Bahama Port Authority, the government response in terms of arbitration. And we already started the conversation on the other side of the show with Aaron Green on the clock. And we were reading some old newspapers. Of course, we have all kind of texts. And I wanted to get right into it, because we run out of time and there's so much things we need to unpack. So I'm going to say, Aaron, let's read a couple of texts first, if you can. Just like run through them.
Yeah. Okay. And then we go into the article.
Yes.
And then the next article, no government ploy to take over GBPA, which is also in the Nassau Guardian.
Our government don't want the Port Authority anymore? I thought we wanted it.
That's not what that said, sir.
Read it again.
No government ploy to take over GBPA.
Our government don't want it no more?
Why would you convey automatically that that means that the government doesn't want it? The government is just saying that they're not... Well, what I infer from the headline is they're saying they're not using trickery or ploys in their attempt. They're just saying there's no government ploy to take over GBPA.
So they might want it, but they're saying no ploy. Okay.
Right. This is the text... What needs to be, Aaron, it is absolutely ridiculous for corporations to be deemed a person in law. You need to expand on that nonsense so people get an idea of the type laws. People find the time to pass. That should be removed. Not only does it give human rights to a non-living thing, but it also acts as a barrier against accountability and punishment for the actual humans responsible. Twilight Zone has nothing on this world. And that imports into our conversation and even the type of language that we're using right now when we're talking about the matter. Another text, how ridiculous is it that our government allowed the port to not pay what was due all those years? There's no excuse other than it was intentional. When Mr. Lang was asked about it and the 7.5% shares the people own in the port, he gave very flippant responses. He was said, good luck finding those shares. Texter, I'm not quite sure what you meant to convey.
Do we have 7.5% shares in the Grand Bahama Port Authority?
Man, so I wish you would let me read these articles because I found an editorial. The editorial...
Is it an editorial signed?
No, it's a letter to the editor. Sorry.
But nobody signed it?
No, it is signed by a Mr. Ed Morrow II, which is why I felt confident to read it, right? Okay. Like I felt it was okay to read it. So let's start just to touch on what you said, whereabouts of the GBPA shares. This is a letter to the editor in the Nassau Guardian, 15th of April, 2024. It says, dear editor, thanks for always, as always, for allowing us valuable space in your publication. The recent brouhaha between the government and the Grand Bahama Port Authority that has found its way onto the front pages of your newspaper reminded us of another controversial subject involving these two protagonists. In what appeared to be one of the most amazing feats of prestidigitation, that's like magic, in the country's history, becoming almost a third rail of local politics, that means the issue was so large that it impacted the electorate. 7.5% of shares in the Grand Bahama Port Authority, reportedly owned by the Bahamas government, simply vanished sometime between 1980 and 1982. That is according to a 2008 BIS, that's Bahamas Information Services, interview with then Prime Minister Hubert Ingraham. According to Ingraham in that interview, quote, the government of the Bahamas owned 7.5% of the shares in the Grand Bahama Port Authority. Up to about the year 1980, it was clear that government continued to act as though it owned those shares. Ingraham continued, quote, the government continued to appoint directors and continued to appoint proxies to represent it at shareholders' meetings. The company continued to put in the public record and in its internal record that the government owned 7.5% of the Port Authority. The government, for some reason, discontinued sometime between 1980 and 1982, acting as though it owned any shares. Close quotes. Ingraham further stated, quote, it is believed that the government sold the shares. There is a mystery about how that sale may have taken place. The government is not now asserting its right to the ownership of the shares, but the government has said in court that it is the owner of record of 7.5% of the shares of the Grand Bahama Port Authority. The government reserves its position with respect to that 7.5% position and the extent to which the owners of the port are unwilling or unable to settle their dispute, as between them being the registered owners of 92.5% of the shares, will help to influence and determine at what point the government asserts what it considers to be a legal right. Close quotes. Mm. Again, that I just read is a quotation from the former Prime Minister, Hubert Alexander Ingraham.
It sounded like a lot of double talk, because I didn't understand most of that. Do we have the shares or we don't have the shares? That's all I ask. Did he say we have it?
I don't think it's double talk. I think it is a technical discussion that requires an interpretation for the layman. And at this point, I think it's important that the Prime Minister, acting in his capacity as both Prime Minister and the Minister of Finance, give the Bahamian public a clear statement, or they present to the court a question for the courts to make a determination of the correct answer.
You believe the Bahamian people care enough to ask our current Prime Minister what happened to the 12% shares?
The 7.5% shares. Yes. Let's go to the article.
I don't believe no Bahamian wanted.
Let's go to the article, More Clarity Needed on GBPA Dispute, which is in Nassau Guardian, 9th of April, 2024. In a significant turn of events that has reignited longstanding tensions between the GBPA and the Bahamas government, Prime Minister Philip Brave Davis recently announced a move to reclaim $357 million purportedly owed to the government by the GBPA. The government's demand, said to be backed by an audit from PricewaterhouseCoopers, represents unpaid reimbursements for services and infrastructure the government claims it provided in lieu of the GBPA's commitments. The GBPA was established under the Hawksbill Creek, Grand Bahama, Deepwater Harbor, and Industrial Area Act in 1955. Under Section 1, Subsection 5 of the Act, the GBPA is entrusted with the provision of educational and medical facilities within the port area to a standard at least equal to that provided in the out islands of the Bahamas by the government at the time of the agreement. Again, under Section 1, Subsection 5 of the Act, the GBPA is entrusted with the provision of educational and medical facilities within the port area to a standard at least equal to that provided in the out islands of the Bahamas by the government at the time of the agreement.
Is this one of the things the government is suing for or complaining about?
Well, let me read the article.
Oh, okay.
This includes the obligation to furnish school rooms, teachers, and educational facilities for children of school age living within the port area, alongside medical services equipped with a qualified medical practitioner, a trained nurse, dispensary, X-ray equipment, and a hospital with no fewer than 4 beds. The GBPA is required to periodically enhance them to meet the growing needs of the population, ensuring the standards remain at least on par with government-provided services elsewhere in the country. Further, the GBPA must provide free of rent, living and office accommodation, free of rent, living and office accommodations for government officers and employees stationed in the port area for various administrative and law enforcement duties, and, quote, for such other purposes as may be mutually agreed upon from time to time between the government and the port authority, close quotes. The Act specifies that these accommodations must match the standard provided by the government in the out islands, and that is a term, quotation, out islands.
I ask again, are these the things that what the government is complaining or, quote, suing for that the port authority has not done?
It appears so, but I want to read the article.
No, I can let you read. Let's keep on asking it. Go ahead. Continue.
The accommodations must match the standard provided by the government in the out islands at the time of the agreement, with plans for these accommodations to be made in consultation with the government, ensuring they meet mutual standards of approval. The Act stipulates that the GBPA must reimburse the government annually for the cost of providing the living and office accommodations and administration activities within the port area, plus an additional 25% to cover government administrative overhead within 30 days of receiving a detailed accounting of those costs.
So are we suing over the offices and administrative buildings that for the staff, or are we suing over the hospital and the schools? Read that sentence again, but for the 30 days, go ahead.
Give me one second.
Yeah, 3 seconds before
the
that.
Act stipulates that the GBPA must reimburse the government annually for the cost of providing the living and office accommodations and administrative activities within the port area.
One.
Plus an additional 25% to cover government administrative overhead within 30 days of receiving a detailed accounting of those costs.
So this is what we're suing over, I assume. I only assume.
But you don't pause. I'm saying you don't need to assume.
What is it? I need you to identify and say, that's it, Cecil.
Mr. Newry, Let's pause right here. In the absence of clarity from the state,
mm-hmm.
right, it would have been beneficial for the state to provide an invoice. Note, I want to get to the article, No Government Ploy to Take Over GBPA, where Fred Mitchell expresses his disappointment with the port making this a public discussion, right? But if the state had produced an invoice, mm-hmm. we wouldn't be having this conversation in the way we would. Neither would the Guardian have felt the need to write an article, more clarity needed on GBPA dispute. Mm-hmm. What you can reasonably assume mm-hmm. from right now, this entire conversation and reading from this article, is that there is not sufficient clarity mm. provided by the state to determine clearly what exactly mm-hmm. the government is invoicing the GBPA for. But I want to continue reading from this article.
My gosh. Go ahead.
Right, if we go back earlier in the article, under the subsection of the Act, the GBPA is entrusted with the provision of educational and medical facilities within the port area. Right? With standard up to the out island. So we can presume that a part of this bill is any monies paid out by the government to provide, to create maintenance of medical and
that doesn't exist
educational facilities. Mm-hmm. Right? That exist within the port.
Yeah, I get that part.
Okay.
And then also the administrative fees for
right.
offices.
For administrative services, for law enforcement services, mm-hmm. and accommodations for office, for individuals on the island.
Plus 25% on top of that.
25% to cover government administrative overhead.
Yes.
Right?
We see that. Okay, go ahead.
This reimbursement, however, is contingent upon the GBPA's financial intake from customs duties and emergency taxes, indicating that GBPA's obligation to pay hinges on the revenue generated from goods entered or taken out of bond within the port area.
Wait, so you said there's an economic downturn, they're not obligated to pay these taxes and fees no more? Is that what that's saying?
This sentence says the reimbursement, however, is contingent upon the GBPA's financial intake from customs duties and emergency taxes, indicating that the GBPA's obligation to pay hinges on the revenue generated from goods entered or taken out of bond.
Interesting.
Now, I think that we would need to read specific provisions of the Act to determine with clarity what that means exactly, mm-hmm. and in legal terms and in terms of their relationship.
It just means the Prime Minister explains more.
I would have presumed it meant their ability to pay. So if they generate through this legitimate business less than what you are requesting from them for the services that they are providing, you don't have the ability to pay it. That's
yes,
what
so
I would
pay.
Have presumed. But we require a
I understand.
Technical legal
continue
reading.
Just saying that's a loophole.
Should the revenue from these duties and taxes exceed the expenditure by the government, the GBPA is not required to make payments accordingly. Should the revenue from these duties and taxes exceed the expenditure? So I think if the revenue and taxes that the port collects on the government's behalf and they give to the government exceeds the amount of money that the government has spent, then, as we read this, the GBPA is not required to make payments accordingly.
So that's all entirely different, because the GDP is paying taxes. They paid over $200 million in taxes. And you're saying if that money that they pay exceeds this government expense, they don't have to pay any additional.
Interesting.
So, and I just want to make this point here. Not only is it important for the Prime Minister to speak, it's important for the Prime Minister to speak from the Office of the Prime Minister and the Ministry of Finance. I don't want to hear words from political party pundits.
You're trying to say you don't want to hear Fred Mitchell. I see where you're trying to go in, though.
Fred Mitchell, it depends. Is he operating in his capacity as the Minister of Foreign Affairs and a member of the Cabinet? If he is speaking in that capacity, then yes, we would like to hear from him. But if he is speaking in the capacity as the chairman of the PLP party, then no, I don't want to hear a word that he says. I don't want to hear him reinterpret or reiterate the words coming from the Ministry of Finance.
What if he combines both posts at the same time and says, this is Fred Mitchell, I'm speaking on behalf as the chairman of the Progressive Party and also as a Minister of Foreign Affairs.
Well, then it represents a grand conflict of interest, and when the I was about to call him the prime minister, when Fred Mitchell is quoted in this article, no government ploy to take over GBPA, and he says that he is concerned. Mitchell said the prime minister does not want public acrimony but accused it of releasing details to the press regarding discussions. When he says things like, Mitchell said investors have walked away from Grand Bahama due to the difficult red tape laid out by the GBPA as he appealed to Bahamians across the political divide to get on board with the idea that Freeport needs to become a Bahamianized city. He called on all right-thinking people to support the efforts of the prime minister in his battle against the owners of the GBPA. He's obviously speaking in his capacity as a chairman of the PLP party and not in the capacity as a member of cabinet representing the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. He could not be, and I think it's important for the state to acknowledge in this moment that the accusations that Mr. Mitchell lay at the feet of the port about taking this conversation to the public should not be followed up with party chatter.
So you're suggesting that some of the utterance of the chairman, Fred Mitchell, is political chatter and not necessarily governance chatter?
Yes.
Interesting.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Mitchell was asked to respond to critics who think the government's actions are part of a, quote, ploy, close quotes, to get control of the GBPA. Quote, no, that's not the case, Mitchell said. Quote, it's just trying to improve the economic lot of the people of Freeport and the island of Grand Bahama. This is our second largest city. It's too big to fail, and it cannot be allowed to fail. The last census shows that since the census in 2010, the city and island lost 5,000 people, so the city is in decline. So the question is, how do we reverse all of that with the resources that you have there? Quote.
Quick question, Aaron. What's the capital of Grand Bahama?
Was it West Grand Bahama? Mile Rock? It's West End. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the idea that West End looked like Auckland's, back of Auckland someplace, and the government has a duty of care to making sure the capital of Grand Bahama, and they said, no, we want to make... Anyway, I'm just saying...
Quote, one of the things that has come to us from anecdotal evidence is that many of the investors who come to Grand Bahama have a problem. Why is he using anecdotal evidence? He's a part of the cabinet of the Bahamas. He can access actual documented complaints by investors to bring forth as a part of this conversation.
Mm.
One of the things is anecdotal evidence. Many of the investors who come to Grand Bahama have a problem, Mitchell said, who is also Minister of Foreign Affairs. And the problem is having to deal with two entities, the GBPA and the Bahamas government, both of which are regulators of the city. The argument is that the model of 1955 is now outdated and needs to be replaced by a single shop, which is the government of the Bahamas, and then the decision is made. That's political talk. That's not governance talk. But the point is that what we need are communications from the office of the prime minister disseminated through the communications unit, right? We don't want to hear politics. We want to hear governance.
But there are two people speaking. It's the prime minister speaking and the chairman of the Progressive Liberal Party speaking. They are the two persons, the two prongs that are leading this charge. And in fact, the chairman or the Ministry of Foreign Affairs is the prime speaker, the one who's speaking on authority.
Just because he is the most articulate orator in the party doesn't mean that you ignore conflicts of interest.
Mm.
What you do is you prepare other members of your party to take on that role when a conflict of interest prevents the chairman from speaking on a matter.
I appreciate this conversation. I appreciate this conversation because it gives information about, one, the duty of care the government should have towards us as Bahamians, and particularly people of Grand Bahama, and particularly people of Freeport. and the duty of care the port has to the people of Freeport and what they have fallen down the gate on, right? We see that there are, in this contract, it says that the Port Authority has a duty of care to make sure they have medical facilities, teaching and facilities, and offices and management of those offices in Freeport. Then it says something that if the taxes that the port comes off is less than profitable, they might be excused from paying taxes and the 25%. Then it said that if the taxes that they do come across is more than what the government is asking, they could pay that and they don't have to pay any more. So now we need to know the numbers also. How much money on taxes has the Grand Bahama Port Authority paid recently in the last 4 years?
Which is why I have this concern of the intrusion and of politics into this very important discussion. The state may have wanted to maintain a private conversation about this national public matter, but they no longer can. The question is, do you then turn around and appear and be seen, right? Be seen to be, allow people, like the old people say, don't even let people be able to put your name in their mouth. But you now respond to the GPPA making it public with such acrimony, with such unnecessary political language. It should be a public matter. The people of the Bahamas, the citizens, have a right to know what is happening, what has not happened over the last 60 years, and why it is right now, today, you think it must now start to happen.
So you think there needs to be a pause and a general overviewing summary of what has happened over the years to where we are at this point, so the Bahamian people should understand or can understand?
Well, the Bahamian people have a right to greater context so we can understand why it is the Grand Bahama Port Authority would be suggesting that the government is attempting to strong arm them, right? That's what their statements suggest, that they are saying that the government is attempting, and we read from the article, GBPA vehemently disputes it owes a dollar of the $357 million government claim. And also from the article that's in the Nassau Tribune, in the Guardian, the article is GBPA rejects government's $357 million claim. And I have both articles because the articles carry significantly different portions of the conversation. But the GBPA, and not just the GBPA, the Tribune in its reporting says that sources suggest to Tribune Business as well that the way that the government has approached the matter suggests to them that this is a part of a larger negotiating or strong-arm tactic to pressure the port to do something.
What you trying to suggest here?
I'm not trying to suggest anything, but we need more clarity on a matter that is of national importance, and the conversation now must be held in the public domain. If I could read from that article, GBPA vehemently disputes it owes a dollar of the $357 million government claim. Let me start right at the beginning. Freeport's claim, which has more than doubled after the number of, Freeport's quasi-governmental authority yesterday did not respond officially to the government's increased payment demand, but well-placed sources speaking on condition of anonymity confirmed that the sum is, quote, vehemently and vigorously disputed, close quotes, by the GBPA and its owners, the Haywood and St. George's family. Tribune Business was told that the government's claim, which has effectively increased by 135% or more than $200 million, has expanded in size because it now covers 5 years of purported expenses as compared to the initial $152 million, which only related to 2 to 3 years. That's $152 million payment. That $152 million payment demand was made on June 12, 2023, and is understood to have covered the period between July 1st, 2022 and March 31st, 2023. Both sums represent expenses that the government alleges were incurred in providing public services in Freeport that exceed tax revenues generated by the city, and thus the GBPA is liable to pay the difference as required by the Hawksbill Creek Agreement. Just the way that whoever told the Tribune Business that, the way they told it, suggests that they were shocked that they added the extra years.
So it said that the Port Authority was prepared to pay some of the money?
Yes.
And all of a sudden the government add more to it and say, so that's why they stop all the negotiations?
Yes.
Interesting.
The GBPA said in a statement, now I'm reading from the Guardian article, GBPA rejects government's $357 million claim. This claim came on the heels of a recent proposal by government to purchase the whole port group, which owns the Port Authority, from its current shareholders at a considerable discount. A proposal that was carefully considered in good faith, but ultimately declined. Having been disappointed in its attempt to purchase the port group outright, it appears the government is attempting to force its desired outcome by other means. This unfortunate turn of events will no doubt prove hugely damaging to the country, damaging to the economy of Freeport, and devastating to investor confidence in Grand Bahama and the Bahamas as a whole. That's not the end of the statement or the quotation, but I'm going to stick a pin there, right? And so, first of all, as you could see, following this conversation through the media stories is a bit difficult in the time that we have allotted and the format of the show, because it was so important to have the entire article available to ensure that when we go to it quickly to respond to a caller or a question, that we understand the fuller or the greater context in which the comment sits, right? Mm-hmm. That's why it's important for, I think, the state to reconsider the way that it is talking about this issue, that it understand the need now that the conversation is in the public domain, that they engage in a conversation for the public domain.
Now, I hear you, and I want you to repeat yourself, and I get repeated this way. I need ABC, four things that should be happening, that the government should now refocus, reorganize this conversation. A, who should address the Bahamian people or the Grand Bahamian people?
Well, it's the Bahamian people understanding that, of course, the citizens of Grand Bahama are, they like prioritize, they like key stakeholders. But obviously, the conversation impacts every single Bahamian in the archipelago, right? So the Prime Minister, in his capacity as PM and Minister of Finance, should be speaking.
So my next question is, what narrative should he be saying? Should it be a pre-narrative during the history of the Grand Bahama Port Authority coming to why we are here? Or should we start from they owe us money?
You cannot understand the they owe us money without understanding the history, right? The why the entity exists, why it was formed the way it was formed. How has the contractual relationship changed over time, right? What we read from the article by Candia referenced conditions. In fact, I have it right there. To a standard at least equal to that provided in the out islands of the Bahamas by the government at the time of the agreement. Have those terms changed? In this present day, how is that term or clause interpreted? Right? So the history is fundamental in understanding the future. And for those key policymakers who may think it's not, you can't, I mean, so understanding the present, you can't get to the future without understanding the past. So the Prime Minister in both capacities as PM and Minister of Finance should be the one speaking. The OPM's communications unit in conjunction with the Ministry of Finance, should be the entity disseminating information and hosting public conversations.
We need to muzzle somebody then. And then only have one person speaking on this on behalf of the
Ministry. Well, we have to identify who the party whip is and tell the party whip to do their job and hold the party members, hold the MPs in line.
What if the party whips is the one who's speaking? Just saying, this
well, then the PM the PM has a considerable task ahead of him.
The third issue is the future of Grand Bahama and the future of the Grand Bahama Port Authority.
Right.
I'm one of those people who might voice that I prefer it to be Bahamian-owned, Bahamian-managed by a Bahamian entity. How, and at one point in time, the chairman suggested that's what he wants also.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Is that a policy of this administration? And if that is a policy of this administration that they're trying to do that or want to do that, should they make that public and let us buy into that idea that we want a Bahamian free port?
Did you just ask me if the Bahamian government should speak to its citizens about the policies that it would wish to employ? Like, shouldn't the Bahamian government get the consent of the Bahamian people before it enacts new legislation or makes substantive policy changes? That's just inherent. That's a given. You make me forget what we was talking about just now. But here's the first part, the idea of what should become of Freeport. Freeport can only be what it is. The question is the government trying to make Freeport something that it cannot be? What is a Freeport? It is a free trade zone. This is our Freeport is a type of free trade zone, right? Where you give concessions on taxes for businesses operating or complete exemptions operating within that free trade zone. That's probably why they call it free port. So the question is, can a free port or the type of free port that we have, free trade zone that we have, can it be owned and owned solely by and managed by the government? Is that what we, the Bahamian people, want? Is that what the existing business community in Grand Bahama, made up of local and international players, is that what they want? Because far too often, the government thinks because it's the government and it can do whatever it wants until the courts tell them they can't, and then they decide to follow the court's ruling. Since they're the government, they may just wake up every morning and assume they could do whatever they want. But practicing obeys against the law, and how will they turn the free port into something that it is not?
I'm going to the caller now. I want to get the caller ready. But why isn't there another free port someplace? Like a Freeport Andrus, a Freeport Acklands. Is there some kind of...
Well, first of all, I'm not sure I like the Freeport that exists now, but that's another story.
Yeah. But let's go to the caller, Stem. Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me?
Hey, see, what's happening to you and your guest?
Doing well, man.
Morning.
I'm a Grand Bahamian. I own land, and I own a business on at Grand Bahama.
Okay.
And here's my issue with the port mayor, the government, or the port authority changing ownership.
Mm-hmm.
That's like concession that we're privy to in Grand Bahama. I'll tell you this right now. The service charge of my property in Grand Bahama is $400-something a year. You get my tax and stamp tax on that? I'm looking at about $6,000 or $7,000 a month. That's one of the concessions we have under the Oxford Creek Agreement.
Okay.
Also, too, with my business license, I am privy to certain privileges.
Mm-hmm.
In Freeport, we have something which we call a bond license.
Mm-hmm.
Without my bond license, I can bring in my vehicles for my business. I could bring in supplies. I could build my business duty-free.
Mm-hmm.
You understand?
Yes.
We can't do that nowhere in the Bahamas. That's one of the concessions
of
under
a
the
free port
agreement.
Right, a free trade zone. Yeah.
It's a free trade zone. So that's one of the concessions we have. That's not available in no other place in the Bahamas.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine me paying off of $400-something a year to $6,000 a year.
Yeah.
That doesn't make sense to us in Grand Bahama.
Well, you say $6,000 a month or $6,000
a year?
A year. Okay.
Besides, there are certain areas in Grand Bahama that the government have direct control over.
Mm-hmm.
There's airports in Grand Bahama that the government have direct control over. The government has direct control over the airport in West End. The government has direct control over the airport in the Missile Base in East Grand Bahama. There's a deep water port in East San Grand Mama. That's where they shot Pirates of the Caribbean. There are things that the bombers, that the government can do directly to affect change right away. And Grand Mama. All this garbage people talking about, oh, the Grand Mama surviving because there's no airport. Look at the airport make one away beyond the headlines just interviewed.
That's so bad. That building don't even exist. I don't believe that. But I with you, sir. I with you.
But you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
The airport that we are, existing airport we have now, is 10 times better than most of the airports in the Bahamas.
Mm-hmm.
It might be in shambles, but it's 10 times better than most of the airports in the Bahamas.
I hear you, caller.
So there are things that we have in Grand Mama that we're privy to, that we have, that's not available nowhere in the Bahamas.
My government is trying to make it better for you, and you need to yield so we can make it better for you.
But here's one of the things where people outside of Grand Mama don't understand or fail to realize. Grand Mama was never designed to be a tourist mecca. If you look at the industrial sector in Grand Mama, the industrial sector in Grand Mama has and always was booming, always was thriving.
Mm-hmm.
Our industrial sector, we have no issues.
So let me ask you a question. Is there anything the government can say or any concession or contractual term that the government could present to you as a business person that would convince you to endorse the government operating or managing the port?
Let me give an example. I had a foreign investor last year. There's an existing business at Freeport that we purchased. The business has shut down, so we just reactivate the license and reactivate the business.
Okay.
The business already exists. There's nothing new. We went to the Port Authority. The Port Authority reviewed the documents. They renewed the license, and within a matter of maybe 2 months, mm-hmm. we got the green light. It took us 7 months to get our documents back from the Bahamas government. 7 months. So why would I want that to interfere? Let's look at another thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Before the Ministry of Grand Bahama came along, Freeport was thriving. We had no issues when the Port Authority was the one-stop shop.
Okay.
And anyone knows, when you're doing business with the government, you have problems.
I know what that call out.
You have problems when you're doing business with the government. Look how long it takes to get your business license.
I think the great...
You have issues when you are dealing with the government.
I think one of the greatest issues the government has is its inability to move at the pace of the development and the very policies they're attempting to enact, enforce, or govern. Thank you very, very much, caller. Thank you. I'm so sorry, caller. Thank you very much for your contribution. Producer, let's go to a break. When we get back from the break... Oh.
Yeah, last 50 minutes. So I'll bring him inside, let you summarize, and then...
Yeah, we try to close out this conversation. And then just a word on how you and I could possibly take this conversation forward in the public domain in a forum like this.
And then we can continue it tomorrow again.
Absolutely.
Yes. Okay. Dad Radio the AM with C.A. Nuri. We'll be right back.
Competition, the entertainment. On May 4th and 5th, our Bahamian athletes will compete with hundreds of the best from around the world to secure their spot in the Paris Olympics.
Gardner takes the title.
Come witness history as our athletes chase the sun from paradise to Paris at the 2024 World Athletic Relays. May 4th and 5th at the Thomas A. Robinson National Stadium. Get your tickets now at worldrelaysbahamas24.org or at the Andre Rogers Baseball Stadium box office.
Boy, why you look so mashed up, like clothes at the washer?
No, boy, just a hard day. What?
Hard day? What happened? The breakfast lady ran out of tuna and gritsy.
We need to start joking about everything, you know. This serious, boy. This real serious, boy.
Boy, what's serious? Tell me.
All right, well, today, boss gave his boy a big, big contract. And nobody else get a chance and nobody say nothing.
Boy, you know that ain't right. You know government contracts ain't supposed to go that way.
Yeah, but nobody saying nothing. Boss man just tell people to sign the papers. Then he send me to meet his boy downtown and collect this envelope.
You need to tell somebody. You need to become a whistleblower.
You know I was a real man, but I never blow no whistle. I be drunk all my life in Junkano.
No way. A whistleblower is someone who tells people what they see when they see something wrong happening at work.
But I ain't no whistleblower, and I ain't no snitch. I still wait there, you know.
Boy, ain't nobody gonna know it's you. All you gotta do is call Crime Stoppers, or you could text them from inside the Crack Crime Bahamas app. They don't ask about you, and your call goes straight through to Miami, so nobody know you is. And if you text, your message get mixed up like Kong Salad.
Call 328-8477 from Nassau, or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
Just sign in and have a seat, please. They'll call you in for your x-ray shortly.
That's why they call it a waiting room. you won't have that problem at Fourth Terrace Diagnostic Center or Imaging at Groner. We never schedule multiple appointments, so you'll be in and out in no time. And if your initial screening reveals a concern, our radiologist can conduct an alternative screening right then and there. Call 328-8157 to schedule an appointment at Fourth Terrace Diagnostic Center or Imaging at Groner today.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio AM. We have a guest here, but I want us to summarize because I'm going to continue to talk about this tomorrow morning for at least one half an hour because I have a guest there also at the tail end. But I want us to summarize for the listening audience to understand and appreciate our goal for today. But go ahead, Erin.
We're just having a conversation about the Grand Bahama Port Authority and the public, the discussion in the public domain with the government about monies owed from the GBPA to the Nassau government. We haven't had enough time to conclude the conversation today. Before we go, I want to read the articles that we referenced in today's conversation so listeners who want to follow up, continue, do their own research, can start there. We start with government ready to step to plate and buy GBPA in the Nassau Tribune's 22nd of November. Then government ups heat on GBPA, that's the Nassau Guardian, 18th of January, 2024. GBPA told to pay $300 million in 30 days, Nassau Tribune, 4th of April, 2024. GBPA vehemently disputes it owes a dollar of $357 million government claim, Nassau Tribune, 5th of April. GBPA rejects government's $357 million claim. That's the 8th of April, 24, Nassau Guardian. More clarity needed on GBPA dispute. That's the 9th of April, 24. No government ploy to take over GBPA, 10th of April, 2024. Government failed to protect interests in GBPA, 10th of April, Nassau Guardian, 2024. Whereabouts of the GBPA shares? Very interesting. Letter to the editor with quotations from a 2008 BIS interview with then Prime Minister Hubert Ingraham on the purported alleged disappearance of 7.5% of shares owned by the government. Those are the articles that we read from today. Again, just to reiterate, even the Nassau Guardian says that the conversation requires more clarity, and I just want to make a note to the Bahamas government that some of your website pages still have 2011 on the bottom of it, and I can never determine whether this is old information or new information. A part of this problem, the lack of transparency and clarity in government and state communications, is your unwillingness or inability to maintain your communications platforms so that people can understand or determine with certainty that the information that they are accessing is valid and current information to inform these conversations.
Okay, good. Thank you very much, Erin. Like I said, I can pick this up again on Thursday, first part of the show, and then who knows, maybe next week we'll continue to interrogate based on whatever new research we come across and what's happening.
New research, man. I didn't research so much of.
I like what you do,
man. But you, anyway,
you just read and that's good.
Dear children, doing the work is worth it. Doing the work is worth it. Yes. Doing the work is worth it.
Yes, it's a task, it's a job.
Yeah,
yes,
doing the work is worth it.
You're a good woman.
I try.
Yeah, good. Anyway, we have the folks from Clifton Heritage folks here again, right? Because there's Heritage Week and they're having a Heritage Day. And we have, of course, Christopher Davis here to give us some new insight, information on which date it is, who are they inviting to come and attend, how do you make a reservation to attend, is it free, who to expect, why is it happening? Go ahead, Chris.
Good morning.
Make sure Christopher's mic is on for me, please. Go ahead, it's good.
Good morning, good morning. Thanks for having me on once again. Always a pleasure to be here, Mr. Nuri, and of course, Ms. Green. I'm happy to be here representing Clifton Heritage Park once again. So this Friday, even though the actual day is tomorrow, UNESCO's World Heritage Day, it is a day when we are to come out and support our heritage sites. It is a day when we commemorate our national heroes, and a day when we, of course, bring focus to different monuments, historical places of significance all around the world, actually. And, of course, the Bahamas is a part of this wonderful planet that we live on, and so we hope to celebrate too. So the day is actually tomorrow, April 18th, but the actual celebration at Clifton Heritage Park at 10 a.m. this Friday, April 19th.
Okay. So this Friday, yes, you have an event. At where is it going to be exactly?
It's going to be at Clifton Heritage
Park. And where is that exactly for people who don't know?
Way out there by Clifton Pier. It's actually on Southwest Road. A lot of people don't know about Southwest Road.
And tell us how to get to Southwest Road.
Right, so you're heading to Lyford Key, and instead of going through the gates to Lyford Key, you take a left
at off the roundabout.
And then you go up the hill past Island House, you're passing Mount Pleasant, and you're going all the way up. You can't miss it. Everyone knows the famous and lovely Jaws Beach, which is also actually a part of Clifton Heritage Park, but which is currently open to the public. But you're not going there. You're coming straight up, and on the right-hand side, you'll see the gift shop. You'll see the ceremonies.
You pass all the slave houses.
Yeah, you see the African village on the right-hand side, which are about seven structures right on your right-hand side. Three of them are built up. If you want to find out more about that village, you got to come on Friday, where I'll be the keynote speaker, and I'll also be the one giving a very short presentation and tour regarding a new exhibit that we're unveiling that is precious to all Bahamians from a cultural and heritage perspective.
Let's talk Friday. What all can I anticipate? What can the listening audience who coming down that way anticipate?
Well, I know Erin Green, she is big on her bush medicine, her bush teas, everything indigenous and otherwise when it comes to refreshments and fruits and all of that. So that will be on hand afterwards. We have a short but sweet program, and we expect several dignitaries, but it's not just for the dignitaries, of course. It is actually more so for the students. And on that day, I think it will be something quite special where the general public will be on the grounds with some of the students, and we will all be learning together. And this is going to be in tandem with a lot of new historical and cultural information, you know, working with the Ministry of Education and the like, and in tandem with certain changes that are coming that I'm not privy to talk too much about yet. But it's a very exciting time for those of us who are history buffs, those of us who love our heritage, those of us who love our African heritage, right? Mm-hmm. And at Clifton, we don't just focus on the African heritage, we focus on the Lucayan heritage as well. And we even talk about the Loyalists, but of course, from a completely and more correct, in my opinion, perspective.
Just quickly, what's the like age range for a heritage site? Because I got two I petitioned in for right now. First of all, I think we need to make the wall opposite Miriam Roker House, where Baigadu used to sit and write song and crack joke all day, that need to be a World Heritage Site. And somebody kidnapped the statue of Black Bear that used to be in front of King and Knights on West Bay Street. Mm-hmm. And they put it in my neighbor yard, which is half of it. It turns out I live on Teach Street and Treasure Lane. And I think that where that statue is hiding in the yard that looked like bush should be a World Heritage Site. Am I qualifying? What type of site, and as a Bahamian, as I'm thinking about heritage sites, what types of sites should I be thinking about to come to you, come to the government and say, I think that this should be a heritage site?
Well, there's much criteria that UNESCO actually has into being a heritage site, right? As you know, I focus mostly on the African heritage culture and, of course, the ways that we resisted slavery and colonization. And we actually have, we are littered with sites like that. So I would actually agree with you, even speaking about someone like Edward Teach. This is just a little snippet of some of the information you can get when you come to see me at Clifton, right? And so Edward Teach is someone who me, myself, I've completely kind of recontextualized and revised, even though I don't like that word. It usually has a negative context in terms of history. But that part of history definitely needs to be revised, and here's why. So someone like Edward Teach, Blackbeard, you know, he is considered the most dreaded pirate. And of course, we are conditioned to believe that colonization was a good thing, as we mentioned on the last show, and that when this man called Woodrow just come and swing his sword and end piracy was great. What we don't realize is that people like Blackbeard, you know, we had 8 lieutenants. 6 of those lieutenants were Africans, and many of his crew were actually runaway slaves. And so from the perspective of British business, of course, that's ruining their business, of which the pirates were famous for.
Piracy expelled, commerce restored, but it turns out the commerce was the slave trade.
Exactly, right? And, you know, here we have it where we've been conditioned to view Blackbeard as this awful, ruthless pirate, yet from our perspective, from the perspective of, I say, 95% of Bahamians, he was not that bad at all, right? Yeah.
Monies. Do I need to bring my money out there on Friday?
Well, there will be various things on sale. The event itself and the program is not charged, but you do have to RSVP by going on the Clifton website, tourcliftonheritage.com. And yeah, you don't need much money unless you plan to support us, of course, because we'll have things on sale at the gift shop. There are going to be items that we are unveiling specifically on that day, items that actually came specifically from Africa, and items that are sort of Clifton branded, so that you could support our one and only Heritage Park, and one of the only ones officially in the Caribbean as well.
Cash, credit, sand dollar.
Either or.
And sand dollar?
Well, I'm not too sure about the sand dollar, but we are very much digitized out there at Clifton, and you could even book tours online.
Who's the chief at Clifton now? Who's in charge?
Our great leader, Mr. Mario Bannister.
Yeah, I want to RSVP with him that Aaron and I are coming. We're coming late.
Please RSVP.
We're coming late, but we're coming.
We can do that right now.
Yeah. Can we go to see Pat Rule?
Yeah, yeah.
We'll see Pat Rule tomorrow.
Clifton Heritage.
Friday. Yeah,
yeah. Clifton Heritage Park this Friday, April the 19th, 10 a.m. Be there.
Yes, and everybody should go. Everybody should go, and who likes culture and history and everything should pass out there.
And next time we come, y'all better have some dilly lemonade, because I want to know what were my ancestors to in their libations. What did they use on the plantation, right, in their daily life?
We're getting into all of that, sister.
Dilly lemonade.
This has been Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Nuri. Of course, it was a Man Down Mashup Wednesday with the combined boat shows with Aaron Green. Have a wonderful day.